Hey, good morning, Buckhead. How we doing? Great to see you. As Andy said, my name is Samer, and I am spending church inside the perimeter for the first time in a minute. And so us OTP people, we're not that weird. So it's good to be here with you guys this morning. 2018 has been quite the year for me and my wife, Julie. I don't know if this is the case for you, but I would imagine that every now and then you've got these years that just kind of seem to have a lot going on in them. Like they're just a little bit different than most other years. They just seem to be a little bit more eventful. Exciting might be a way to describe it, but 2018 has been that year for us. And I'm just gonna give you the Cliff Notes version of it. And then I'm gonna give you some details because details are fun. In 2018, I got one of my kidneys surgically removed. Me and my wife bought our first house. We did a pretty major renovation on our first house, and we welcomed, Julie gave birth to our first child just 3 weeks ago, which is pretty amazing. Yep, thank you. You can clap about that. But all those four things happened in a matter of 5 months. Yeah, now you're not clapping anymore, are you? It all started back in February. I was playing basketball in this church league. Actually, Matt Noblet, our living room director, he's on the team. He's our fearless leader. He's our point guard. Matt's a baller, by the way, okay? He's really good at basketball. I am not. I just joined the team because I just think it was something fun to do. And I try to be good at basketball, but as you can tell from my stature, that's not something that I would be good at. And we're not a very good team, but we do have an Instagram account. And so... ATL Sleepers, if you want to support the home team, you can do that here today with a quick follow. So we had this game one night in Sandy Springs, and, you know, I don't score a lot, so I just kind of sacrificed my body for the team. And so I decided, yeah, I was going to set a pick for one of my teammates. Now, if you're not a basketball person or a sports person, a pick is when you stand still in front of a defender and block him so that your teammate can get around him and you to the basket. Now, the nature of a pick is you're standing still and somebody is running full force into you, which for the average-sized person is not a problem. For the below-average-sized person, that can be a problem. So I set a pick on a guy that I had no business setting a pick on. And he runs into me and he hits my stomach and it hurts really, really hard. But in church league basketball, you play through the pain. Serious, people. So I got up. And I'm feeling it, but I'm like, you know, that's what happens when you get hit in the stomach, so I'm just gonna let it go. I'm gonna keep going. The pain didn't subside. So I go home, and the pain doesn't subside. That night, I get into bed, and the pain doesn't subside. Around 2:30 in the morning, my wife hears me wincing in pain, and she wakes me up, and she's like, hey, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm not. Something's going on in my stomach. I don't know, but it hurts really, really bad. It's gotten worse. So around 2:30 in the morning, she takes me to the emergency room, and we get into the emergency room, and they gave me pain meds, which were fantastic. And then they take a CT of my stomach. So about an hour later, the doctor comes back in and he's like, Mr. Massad, have you ever had any kidney issues? And I was like, no, why? And he says, because your kidney is huge. And I was like, I'm sorry, is that a technical term? Like what are we saying here? So he goes on to show me my CT scan of my abdominal area. And we're about to get real intimate here. You're about to see my CT scan of my internal organs, okay? So don't say that I wasn't vulnerable with you here this morning. But this is what he showed me. So this here is a normal kidney. This was my other kidney. Yeah, looks like it was fake, but it's not. So what turned out to be the case was that my kidney, you know, it takes fluid in and it processes it and takes the fluid out. Well, what my kidney was never doing my entire life was the fluid was never leaving the kidney. So for my entire life, it was slowly filling up like a water balloon. Yeah, it's the closest I'll ever get to being pregnant, ever. I had multiple urologists tell me that it was the biggest kidney they'd ever seen, to which I responded, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you. So the only way to really solve this problem was to remove the kidney. It wasn't functioning anymore. Good thing my other kidney was killing the game, so I didn't really need it, okay? But as you can imagine, I mean, surgery, a pretty major surgery to remove an organ is going to add some stress to your family. And let me just remind you, my wife is pregnant at the time. So she has to now, my pregnant wife has to take care of this bedridden patient. I can't do anything. It really took me out of the game for about 7 to 8 weeks. And so she had to take care of me. She spent the night at the hospital with me. We spent Easter Sunday in the hospital. We listened to Andy preach while I ate pancakes and what looked like bacon. But she did it like a champ, but it definitely added some stress. And let me just go and back up. The week right before I went into surgery is when we closed on our house and we entered into due diligence. I was out of town when we put an offer in. That was stressful. I was out of town when the offer got accepted. That was crazy. And then we needed to renovate the house, right? I mean, the house isn't a fixer-upper, right? But I mean, it needs a little bit of work. So we decided we're going to get our Chip and Joanna Gaines on just a little bit. And let me just tell you, HGTV makes it look so pretty and awesome, but it's not. But we had to push back the renovation because, well, my kidney surgery kind of took me out of the game and it took me a while to find a contractor. And you know how that goes. That isn't always easy. And here was the other thing. With every week that went by was another week that got closer to my wife having a baby. And in the interim, while we're renovating and trying to figure out this whole house thing, my parents graciously let us live in their basement, which, thank you, which was awesome. But when my wife is pregnant, she eventually wants to get into her own house, if you know what I'm saying. She wanted to nest. I didn't know that was a thing. I said, I'm sorry, I thought it was a thermostat. She said, no, I want to nest in my home. I was like, okay, I'm going to get you there as soon as I possibly can. Well, you know how renovations go. 4 weeks turn into 5 weeks, turn into 6 weeks, turn into 7 weeks. We finished the renovation less than a week before she went into labor. And just to show you how close we cut it, my wife is upstairs on the day that she went into labor. She's upstairs in the beginning of the labor process, and me and my dad are downstairs installing our washer and dryer because I promised her that would happen before the baby came. So to say that we experience a level of stress and anxiety would be an understatement. Now, there was a nice bow at the end because my wife and I said we welcomed our sweet baby girl into the world for the first time. I know, thank you, I appreciate it. We actually have another picture. Her name is Harper. That's a close-up of her. And isn't it, let's just be real for just a moment. Sometimes newborns look like aliens, like they just do, and it's okay. It's just how life is. And I told Julie, if our daughter looked like one, I was gonna own it. But she doesn't, you know? She kinda looks cute, right? Which is awesome. She's here today, hearing me preach for the first time, so hope she likes it. But 2018 has been quite the year so far. Stress and anxiety, at all times high, in a way that I've never felt it before. I mean, I woke up thinking about cabinetry and hardwood floors, and it sounds so stupid now to think about it, but it literally kept me up at night. I mean, there were so many things that had to get done. And so today, for just a few minutes, I wanna have a conversation about stress and anxiety that you might be experiencing in your own life. Because no matter where you come from or what you believe or don't believe about God or what your story is, the one thing that puts us all on the same playing field this morning is that we all on a day in and week out basis deal with a level of stress and anxiety in our own lives. And it might not be getting a kidney removed. It might not be renovating a house or giving birth to your first child. It could be. But it might be a really, really full calendar. Like you got so much going on and there's no time to breathe and no time to stop. For some of you, the things that bring stress and anxiety on any given day is your iPhone that can't keep a charge. You know, you're below 10% before 12 and you don't have a charger and you're freaking out inside. It's okay. For some of you, the thing that brings stress and anxiety, you've got a lot of stuff going on at work and you've got some tensions to manage with a team. You're trying to figure out how to move forward. You've got some kind of product launch. You're trying to figure out what's going on and how to get things going at work. Maybe you got emails coming in on a basis that you can't keep up with. Maybe for you, stress and anxiety is an out-of-control group text that people just won't stop texting in. But for whatever reason, you can't not look, you know? For some of you college students in the room, the stress and anxiety is picking a major, and you've got something you want to do, and your parents got something they want you to do, and they're not the same. Stress and anxiety. For some of you, it's the stock market. Which way is it going to go today? For some of you, turn on the news, and that brings about a whole nother level of stress and anxiety, seeing on what's going on in our country and all over the world. And sometimes it's good, but sometimes it's really, really bad. For some of you, it's some family drama. For some of you, it's some tension with a family member. For some of you, you're in the middle of dating, and dating is not easy, and you're trying to figure out how to do the whole thing. For some of you, maybe you're planning a wedding. For some of you, it's the unknown. that there is unknown ahead of you. There is something you're about to step into. You don't know what's gonna happen, how it's going to go, and it's creating stress and anxiety. See, no matter who you are in the room, and we could go on and on and on with a laundry list of things that create stress and anxiety in your life and in mine. And so today, I wanna have a conversation about it, but I just gotta be really, really honest at the beginning. This was a very intimidating sermon to write, because anxiety is such a big issue and a very complicated issue. And I didn't want to get up here and just say, well, the answer is Jesus loves you. Because he does. And we're going to talk about that. But anxiety is massive. And I didn't want to minimize anybody's struggle and journey as they battled anxiety. And so here's my hope. My hope today is that we would just start a conversation. That we would start a conversation that I believe can be helpful and maybe even more hopeful. And maybe begin to take a step towards God's best for your life. Take a step towards a new normal in a brand new direction. Because in our country today, anxiety is a huge problem. A few statistics that might blow your mind like they did mine. That over 40 million Americans struggle with some kind of debilitating form of anxiety. That it is actually the most common form of officially classified mental illness in the United States. In some cases, watch this. That anxiety is more common than the common cold? That we got people more stressed, more people stressed than they are sneezing? This will blow your mind. The average child today experiences and exhibits the same level of stress and anxiety as psychiatric patients did back in the 1950s. What? In fact, the lifetime incidence rate of anxiety is 25%. That means one in every four Americans, one in every four of you, if you're into statistics, will at some time in your life experience the debilitating effects of anxiety. It's a massive issue. And I don't know about you, but when I think about all that I have going on and I look at my life, just me personally, it doesn't totally surprise you. And I imagine it doesn't surprise you either. In fact, I believe it's a symptom of our culture. It's a symptom of the world that we live in. Because there's kind of some things that would describe my life that I would imagine that describe your life that kind of add to this whole mess. And it's this: we're a culture and we're a people that are overwhelmed, overcommitted, and overexposed. We're a people that are overwhelmed, overcommitted, overexposed. We're overwhelmed. We're thinking too much. Like, we've got so many decisions that we have to make, so many things that we're thinking about. Well, what are we gonna do today? What are we gonna do with the kids? Where's the money gonna come in? How's this going to happen? We have so many expectations to live up to, people's expectations to live up to, family's expectations, spouse's expectations to live up to. We're overwhelmed, we're thinking too much. We're overcommitted, we're doing too much. For some of you, no does not exist in your vocabulary. You don't wanna miss out on anything. You wanna be a part of everything. And come on, isn't it so true? Let's just be real, just be honest just with yourself. Busyness has become a status symbol. The more busy you are, the more important you are. Then the more busy you are, the more revered you are. And it's like we look for an opportunity to be busy and to let everybody know how busy we are, but we're overcommitted. For some of you, your kid's soccer schedule is driving your family crazy. Every weekend is a tournament. Every weekend is a ballet recital or some kind of rehearsal. We're overcommitted, we're doing too much. And then we're overexposed, we're seeing too much. A large part of this is because of what we see on our phones. I mean, come on. All of a sudden, I don't know when this happened, but very, very quickly it became that whenever you get a text message, you have to respond immediately. Doesn't matter what you're doing. You don't even get 24 hours on a text anymore, right? You immediately have to respond. That our phones are constantly giving us notifications. This will be a fun experiment. Today, I want you to count how many times your phone notifies you about something that does not matter. Every app wants to tell you that something is going on. I mean, we're seeing so much. For some of you, social media is driving your anxiety and your stress. Because on social media, guess what happens? You see everybody's highlights, and then what starts to happen, you start wondering why your life doesn't look like their highlight, and it creates stress and anxiety because you're comparing, you're not measuring up, you don't feel like you're enough. The news, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, man, it just feels like the world has gotten so bad recently. And I said, I don't know if it's gotten bad or any worse. And again, I might be wrong about this, but I just said, I don't know if it's gotten any worse. I just think we're able to see everything that's going on in the world at a way and in a pace that we've never been able to see it before. Like, you wanna talk about worse? I mean, this is the history, the disgusting history of our country with the civil rights movement and the Civil War that we actually had to go through. That seems pretty bad compared to anything going on today. So I don't know if it's any worse. I just think we're able to see it through every avenue possible. And so it seems like it could never be worse, but we're seeing too much. So come on, when you take a step back and you look at your life through this lens and you look at all these things got going on, man, it's no surprise that anxiety is a big problem. So what do we do? Do we just start doing less? Do we just start thinking less? Do we just start clearing our calendars? Do we start seeing less? Do we delete all the apps on our phone except the one that makes phone calls? Like, what do we do? Well, I don't think it's that simple, because I think anxiety is a much bigger problem than that. See, the kind of anxiety that paralyzes you, the debilitating anxiety that robs you of God's best for you, the kind of debilitating anxiety that robs you of joy, that robs you of relationships, that ruins marriages, that ruins your workplace environment, like the kind of anxiety that keeps you in a place where you can't even get through a day is way bigger than just being overwhelmed, overcommitted, and overexposed. These are symptoms of an even bigger and deeper problem. And so in order to get there, in order to talk about what we can do to solve this problem, we got to kind of identify it. And so what I want to do for just a couple of minutes, I want to give you a little bit of a science lesson about anxiety, how it really works, like what is actually happening physiologically and physically in your body when anxiety strikes. It's a bit of a biology lesson. My brother's a doctor, so I think he's going to be very proud of what I'm about to say, I hope. We all have what's called the nervous system. You know this, right? The nervous system, I already lost some of you. Just stick with me. I'll walk you through it. Kind of a professional, okay? So, nervous system. The nervous system is a system in your body, we all have one, and it is responsible for all of the conscious and unconscious actions that your body does, right? By sending neurons from the brain, it transmits them to your body and back and forth, and it communicates, and it's unbelievable. Side note, if you want your faith to grow, you should study the body, because it'll blow your mind. And maybe you're not sure what you believe about God. Just study how crazy the body is. It'll blow your mind. It might make you believe about God. So we got this nervous system, but then the nervous system, you've got some subsystems within the nervous system, and one of them is the autonomic nervous system. The autonomic nervous system is responsible for all of the automatic responses that your body does without you even having to do anything. It's responsible for all the unconscious actions that your body partakes in. And within that, there are two subsystems, one of which being the parasympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic nervous system is what happens when your body is at rest, things that you don't even think about, like digestion. You don't eat food and think, digest. It just happens, right? But then you got the sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system is responsible for activating your body's fight or flight response. The fight or flight response. The fight or flight response, you've probably heard of this. What it is a survival mechanism that is hardwired into who we are as human beings. That whenever we face a threat, whenever we face some kind of difficult circumstance, whenever we face something dangerous, fight or flight kicks in, and we either fight or run in order to survive. Let me give you an example. Let's say you decide you want to go hike through the woods. Piedmont Park just wasn't cutting it anymore. So you get a little crazy and you go start hiking through the woods and you go on an adventure and then you run into a bear. Immediately what happens when you run into a bear is that your sympathetic nervous system kicks into overdrive and this neurochemical reaction starts to happen and this chemical called cortisol starts to get pumping into your brain and you kind of hulk out, okay? Minus the green and the muscles, but that you hulk out internally, right? And what starts to happen is your blood starts pumping, your heart starts beating at a much faster rate, and blood starts pumping even more to every part of your body. Your vision gets laser focused, your adrenaline starts to pump, you start to have heavy breathing, and even your bladder starts to relax. You ever heard the phrase, "I was so scared I peed my pants"? That's not a joke. That's your body doing what it was meant to do. And in that moment, you fight or you run in order to survive. That's a sympathetic nervous system. You don't even have to ask it to do it. It just does it. And we've all experienced it, not just in front of a bear. See, that kind of anxiety is actually good for you. There's a level of anxiety that we need to live and to survive. In fact, there's a level of anxiety that we even need to be productive. There's a guy named David Barlow. He works at Boston University and he studies anxiety. And this is what he wrote, that without anxiety, little would be accomplished. The performance of athletes, entertainers, executives, artisans, and students would suffer. Creativity would diminish. Crops might not be planted. This would be as deadly to the species as nuclear war. Wow. So there's a level of anxiety that's actually good for us. However, anxiety becomes a problem. Watch this. When your fight or flight response gets triggered and there's no immediate threat, anxiety becomes debilitating. And anxiety begins to rob you of God's best for your life. And anxiety begins to rob you of joy when your flight or fight response is triggered and there's no proverbial bear in front of you. See, when anxiety strikes and there's no immediate threat, here's what's happening. That means that we are becoming anxious over an imagined future that we cannot control. See, here's what a professional therapist would tell you, and here's what's true about anxiety, is that it is always future-oriented. That the debilitating anxiety that robs us of God's best for our lives is always future-oriented and is fueled by this thing called fear. That fear, ultimately, at the root, is the driver of all of our anxiety. See, anxiety, essentially, is a meteor shower of what-ifs. And it all is driven by this thing called fear. What if I don't make it? What if we don't make enough money? What if that check doesn't come through? What if he doesn't get better? What if she doesn't come back? What if I fail? What if I embarrass myself? What if I'm not good enough? What if she doesn't get better? What if? What if? What ifs? And these what ifs, they snowball and they get worse and worse and they grow worse and worse. And we begin imagining the worst possible scenario, even though there is no threat immediately in front of us. And what makes a what if is that we have zero control. And it is those what ifs that makes us feel like we are carrying and shouldering the weight of the world. See, because here's what's true. When perceived control decreases, debilitating anxiety increases. When perceived control decreases, debilitating anxiety increases. There is nothing more fearful than not being in control. You ever taught a 15-year-old how to drive? Some of y'all didn't. You had someone else do it. And you acted like you didn't have time. You were terrified. Put that on steroids. There's nothing more fearful than not being in control. And the what ifs, and the what ifs, and the what if after what if, here's what starts to happen. It begins to sabotage our minds. All this unhelpful and hurtful thinking begins to literally sabotage our minds that affects every avenue of our lives. People call this the cognitive triangle. You've got your thoughts, which then feed into your feelings, which then affect your behavior. And then it cycles all the way through as your thoughts get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Your thoughts, your mind is the control center of everything. And what begins to happen with the what ifs is that we start to imagine the worst possible circumstance. And all of a sudden it affects how we feel and how we behave. And in the midst of the anxiety, in the midst of all of the what ifs, it affects the way that we see life. It affects our relationships. It affects the way that we work. It affects the way that we handle ourselves during the day. For some of you, it affects the way that you see your faith. In fact, if you're a Jesus follower in the room and you say you've placed your faith in God, a friend of mine shared a super interesting quote with me that for those of you that have put your faith in God, anxiety is like temporary atheism. For some of you, your anxiety has gotten to the degree that it makes you forget about God. The what ifs, the what ifs, the what ifs, and we sabotage our minds and our hearts, and it's paralyzing and debilitating, and it robs you of God's best for your life. And for some of you, that might be a new thought that you might need to hold on to, that God actually has the best for your life, that God actually desires best for your life, and that best is not a life ridden by anxiety and stress. And so now with a better understanding of the root of it, of where it comes from and how it rears its ugly head, what do we do about it? What can we do about our anxiety? Well, the Apostle Paul, I believe, gives us some insight. I think the Apostle Paul gives us a step that each and every single one of us can take that would be helpful and practical. But I really believe that this one step that the Apostle Paul gives us can actually be life-changing for everybody in the room. And here's why I love that we're gonna be talking about Paul here for just a couple of minutes, what he wrote in the book of Philippians. Because if anybody understood how to handle stress and anxiety, it was the Apostle Paul. If there's anybody that understood what it was like to fear and to have what ifs in front of him and how to handle the unknown and difficult circumstances, it was the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul was the greatest missionary that ever lived, and he traveled around the Mediterranean rim planting churches. And the guy, he had a very purposeful and impactful and fulfilling life, but he did not have an easy life. I mean, he was shipwrecked. He was snake bitten. He was beaten within an inch of his life for all that he believed. And he was even imprisoned and eventually killed for his faith. And here's what's so cool about Philippians is it was a letter that he wrote while he was in jail. He's in prison because of his faith. Caesar's trying to figure out what to do with him. And he wrote this letter. That's how we got Philippians. We call it a book, but it's really a letter that he wrote to his friends in Philippi, where he planted a church. And he's writing them to encourage them. And so if anybody understood how to handle anxiety and what to do in the face of it, it was the Apostle Paul. And he writes this in Philippians chapter 4, verse 4. He says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice." They said, hey, listen, always, that no matter what you face, no matter what circumstance you find yourself in, no matter what difficulty you have going on, no matter what stressor is facing you, that you should find joy, that you should have joy, that you should choose joy in the Lord. You gotta remember, he's in prison and he's writing to his friends in Philippi, who were certainly being persecuted because they lived in a time when Rome and the world did not take too kindly to Christians. So the Apostle Paul saying, in the face of what should bring stress and anxiety, choose joy. See, because here's what's true about anxiety, that anxiety is the thief of joy. Anxiety robs you of joy. It steals your joy. And so here's the question. How in the world did the Apostle Paul not allow what should have been an anxious and stressful time rob him of his joy? And how is it that he could write it with such conviction to his friends who are experiencing difficulty the same? And why is it that you and I should believe it today? Choose joy and not let anxiety be the thief of it. Because here's what the Apostle Paul understood, and this is massive. The Apostle Paul understood that the Christian faith was not defined by temporal circumstances. The Apostle Paul understood that no matter what he faced, there was someone bigger, and his name was Jesus. Because here's what the Apostle Paul knew, and here's what the Apostle Paul experienced on the road to Damascus. Why is it that he could choose joy and tell others to choose joy no matter what they face? It's quite simply this. Jesus rose from the grave. That Paul would say, the reason why I can choose joy is because I follow a Savior. And if you're here, we make a big deal about Jesus and we talk about following Jesus and we want you to follow Jesus. Why? Because we have a Savior who stared death in the face and said, I win.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. And so the Apostle Paul would say, the reason why I can choose joy, the reason why I can have joy no matter what, isn't because my hope is found in these circumstances, but because my joy is anchored to one that could not even be held down by death. So he tells us, choose joy. And he goes on, he says something interesting, verse 5. He says, let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Now, I don't know about you, but gentleness seems to be the outward expression of inner joy. Outward expression of inner joy. I don't know about you, but when I'm stressed out and anxious, I'm everything but gentle. I mean, my wife is like, yup. I'm on edge. I'm sporadic. I'm easily irritated. I get angry really easily. I treat people that I love with a lot of disrespect and act like I don't love them at times, right? But when we choose joy, there's this gentleness that is evident to all. Why? Because the Lord is near, that he is with us, that he is close to whoever calls on him. And then the Apostle Paul gives us this big step, this moment that he's been building to. And it's a verse that you've probably all heard before. Your grandma's got a cross stitch in a frame that hangs over the toilet in her bathroom. But he writes this in verse 6, and this verse can begin to change the tide of anxiety in your life. He says, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Do not be anxious about anything, Paul says, but in every situation, in other words, in every circumstance, no matter what you face, no matter what is ahead of you, in every situation, do not be anxious. Rather, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. He says, prayer and petition. What does that mean? Whatever it is that you've got, give it to God. Whatever it is that you're carrying, whatever fear is in front of you, whatever what if is paralyzing you, whatever is making you anxious, process through it and give it to God. Give it to the one who is bigger than you. Here's what I love. Paul didn't say, hey, just hold on till it gets better. He didn't say, oh, you'll be fine, just try harder. He didn't say, oh, well, just clear your calendar and go take a cat nap and just try to do some like aromatherapy and just try to do some essential oils and make yourself feel better. Not a shot at essential oils. He didn't say, look within and try harder. He said, look beyond because you can't. He said, look beyond to the one who can. He said, look beyond yourself because clearly you can't. Anxiety-ridden, stress-ridden, and fearful, you can't. So give it to the one who can. And he says, do it coupled with thanksgiving, which is a cool thought. Thanksgiving means to show gratitude. He's saying, hey, as you bring this to God, that you would at the same time remember the faithfulness of God in your past. You want to know a cool recipe for obliterating the what-ifs of your future is remembering the faithfulness of God in your past? Yeah. And there might be some of you in the room, like Sam, I don't have any of that faithfulness of God stuff in the past, because I'm not even really sure I believe about God. So what does that do for me? Let me just tell you, if you have a conversation with anybody who's put their faith in Jesus and they've been walking with Jesus for any amount of time, just have a conversation and ask them about the faithfulness of God in their life. And they'll tell you, and I would even believe that you might be encouraged by what they might tell you. And so Paul says, with prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, it's this formula where we put complete and utter dependence and trust in God. Because if anxiety is the thief of joy, watch this, joy is the product of trust. If anxiety is the thief of joy, then joy is the product of trust. Joy is the product of looking beyond ourselves to the only one who can. And then he says, and when you do, and when you trust, he says in verse 7, then the peace of God, the peace from God, which transcends all understanding, I love that, which doesn't even make sense to the onlooker, which doesn't make sense to us, but we know that it's there. The peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. That word guard, it's a military term. It means to build a garrison around for protection. He's saying that the peace of God, well, Sam, how does it work? I'm not totally sure. I can't really understand it, but here's what I know. That when you present it to God, when you give it to God, something crazy happens. This peace that I can't understand, this peace that might make onlookers think, how are you okay? How are you still going? How are you still living? How are you still walking? How are you still believing? Well, there's this peace. That's not just about being happy. It's way more deep-seated than that. This inner tranquility that bypasses emotions. That the peace of God will guard our hearts and our minds. I love that he said minds. It's like Paul knew about this cognitive triangle before he knew anything about the brain. So that peace of God, that peace of God, it will protect your mind and your heart from unhelpful and hurtful ways of thinking. It'll protect your mind when that what if comes in. What if I'm not enough? What if she doesn't come back? What if he doesn't get better? That the what ifs that compiling in that sabotage our hearts and our minds, the peace of God that we can't fully understand will guard, will protect from the what ifs that debilitates us, that paralyzes us, that makes us forget that God is still there. But it's gotta start with you and me being able to put our pride, put away any embarrassment, and say, okay, God, I'm going to give it to you. Just became a father, like I mentioned. So I'm learning a lot of new things, a lot. And one thing you'll learn very quickly as a parent, and you don't have to be a parent to know this, you get this. My child, she's gonna be 3 weeks old tomorrow. And when she needs something, she can't tell me. And when she needs something, when she's stressed out about something, when she's afraid of something, when something is bothering her, when she needs to be comforted, she doesn't just try to figure out on herself. You know what she does without even thinking? She cries out for help. She cries out. She's not too prideful for it. She's not embarrassed by it. She's not ashamed of it. She cries out loud and proud. Because she knows, before she even knows, she knows that she can't. And eventually she's gonna get a little bit older and she's gonna grow up way too fast, that everyone keeps telling me. And she's still gonna cry, but something else is gonna happen is she's gonna be able to start walking one day, and when she walks and she needs something, or she's crying, or she's afraid, or she's frustrated, she's gonna run up to me or her mom, and she's gonna put her hands up, which is a universal sign for, hey, pick me up. I need you to comfort me. You might not be able to fix what just happened, but you can comfort me. It might still be happening, and I might still hurt, and I might still be afraid, but I can be comforted, and I can feel peace with you, Dad, and with you, Mom. For some of you, it's not just about putting aside your pride in presenting your request to God. It's about changing the posture with which you approach God. That for some of you, when you come to God, when you pray in the morning, it's not about just saying the words. It's when you're by yourself in that living room, you're getting to a place where you are physically changing your posture and saying, God, I need you because I can't. But he can. So what if? What if? What if we trust it today? Like, what if we actually gave God a shot and we chose to trust? Not to trust that he's gonna fix it all, and not to trust that he's gonna make everything the way that we want it, but trust that somehow that peace will guard and protect our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus. Like, what if we, for the first time, maybe invited God into the conversation? Maybe that's what it looks like for you to trust. Maybe for some of you, what it looks like to trust is to literally put aside your pride and change the posture with which you approach God. Maybe that's what it looks like for you to trust. For some of you, maybe what it looks like for you to trust is invite people into the conversation that God has brought into your life. Maybe that's what it looks like for you to trust. Maybe what it looks like for some of you to trust is to walk outside and go figure out what Buckhead Care Ministry has for you, because God has clearly put Buckhead in your path. And so maybe that's what it looks like for you to trust. But what if? What if every morning, in fact, what if you tried this every morning this week? What if every morning you just decided, and real quick, even if you don't believe in God, prayer, if I could just be so bold, what if you just gave it a shot? I mean, there might be some of you where it's like, well, I'm not really even sure what else to do. Be curious. Present your request to God. So even if you're in the room and you're not sure you believe about God, what if everybody in the room, every morning this week, we would come to God? We wouldn't be anxious about anything, but we would come to God, that we would present our requests to God through prayer and petition with thanksgiving. And we wouldn't allow our anxiousness to rule. We wouldn't allow our fear to rule. We wouldn't allow the what ifs to rule, But every morning this week, we would ask for the peace of God that transcends all understanding to guard our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus. And no matter the source of your anxiety, I'm telling you, that's a really, really good first step to take. And for many of you, it might be the only step that you ever have to take.